Welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
Welcome, welcome to your vibrational upgrade here. The day of this show is December 25th, 2016, and it happens to be the birthday of what I consider to be the biggest heart and the strongest healer to have ever walked planet Earth. And so I want to introduce two folks who are with me today, Maureen and David. You guys want to say hi?
Hello.
Yeah, we're going to talk about meditation. We're going to talk about the mind and why and how meditation is really, really helpful right now. And we're also going to be letting you have the myths and the lore around meditation be debunked, because it gets such a rap that it's this, and this, and Americans run from it in particular. And it's not everything that we're presented with. It's really simple, and I want you to hear two people's experience with it and how it's helped quiet the noise in their mind and calm and quell the negativity and lead to something greater. And that's the nature of, from everything I know from studying and being a yoga teacher certified in India, it's what the intention was by the original sages when they asked the question, where do we have more power over the external world or over the internal world? And they designed all of the tools of yoga and meditation as an answer to, well, it's the internal world and our reaction to the external world. And it gets much more, as we progress into this, the path, I should say, and we learn more and we open up more to who we really are and we quiet the ego mind that is what the majority of folks live from. As we go about our busy lives, we start to see how much our thoughts, how much our being can actually do and create. That's a little bit, I have a lot of other shows about that, so that's not where we're going to go today. Where we're going to be today is more the beginning of the process and the meat of that beginning, and then you can hear what it can lead to. So in why work with your mind? Why do something along the lines of what is called meditation? You're going to hear the why today. So if you're somebody who's been having a mind racing with thoughts, dealing with a fair amount of negativity, you feel like your mind is suppressing you, your thoughts are telling you you can't, don't bother, you'll never get there anyway, you'll never do it anyway, it'll never happen anyway. All of that noise is totally typical. Right now we're living on planet Earth in the times of what's considered the greatest shift for humanity ever in our evolution, more than when we went upright, more than when we got the dexterous thumbs or we went from ape to human. It's the biggest leap that humanity's ever made, and there's a lot of cleansing and purging happening on planet Earth herself. Both humans and the Earth itself is purging the old consciousness that has been from an ego perspective of greed and fear and lack and worry and doubt, all those lower what's called vibrations. Thoughts have been measured. They have calibrations. So when you know how when you're depressed, you have less energy. You don't light up a room. Then when you're joyous and excited, you have more energy and you can do more. It's just that. It's a higher level of energy or a higher vibration when we're positive, when we feel that joy and excitement and enthusiasm. And so a lot of people are dealing with that lower level humming because it's time for all of us to purge and align with our hearts and therefore our spirits and who we really are in our bodies. It's humanity's spiritual awakening. So you're going to hear two people who've had their spiritual awakening through the first beginnings of man. My mind is just like, you know, I don't like what it's telling me. I don't like how I'm feeling. I don't like my choices. What else is possible? So I'd like to introduce first David. If you could speak to that, this is one of my three brothers. This is David Kay, and he has a blog that he started called tenderfootyogi.com. And it's a really good resource for beginners who are just wondering, how do I work with my mind? What is all this stuff I'm hearing people talk about with prayer or meditation? How do I reach beyond my mind and the small me to connect with something bigger? And I'll let him take over. David? Hi.
Hi. Thanks for mentioning my blog, which I think I'm glad that actually I had launched it before we had this conversation. It's brand new. There's stuff up there. I've been writing quite a bit there. So thanks for mentioning it. That was sweet. So every time that we've and I don't know if anyone a listener would know this. I mean, this is when I this is the second time we've recorded a call. We've certainly spoken way more than that. You were the one I reached out to when I felt the need, the impulse to get out, that doing something different was the thing to do, and came back to meditation, yoga, and this spiritual path that I'm on now. But it's funny that you mentioned when we were chatting just before you pressed the record button today that you read a post that I put up, which was about authentic prayer, and that was something that was new for me. Just prayer in general was something that was new for me as an adult, as a boy who grew up Jewish and then that didn't really stick, I guess. I mean, I still have a tie to Judaism. I can still be moved when I hear a hymn sung in Hebrew. Those prayers that we heard in Hebrew school and such. But I don't really have an attachment there now. So a couple years ago when I started on this path and prayer became something that I started to do, I remember asking you about kind of why I felt like I wanted to do it, why it felt natural that it was coming up after when I was kind of completed a meditation session. So that post that I just put up, I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, kind of grew out of that conversation of the last time we spoke, at least one of the questions from the last time we spoke. So it's timely. So you want me to start? I have a couple questions for you. One of them, and kind of this is not going to come as a surprise to you, that I have like a meditation mechanics question for you. Does that sound like a good place for me to start, Allison?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to trust the flow.
What's that?
I'm going to trust the flow.
Yeah, okay. So my question is about visualizations. So in the type of meditation that I do, that you teach, it's not about, you know, a guided visualization of any kind. The only visualization is really, I remember way back when I first started listening and paying attention, there was an instruction to let a thought flow like a leaf in a stream, right? So that's a visual, not a guided visualization, but a visual.
David, can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Maureen, can I welcome you to the show?
Sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't do this yet, David. Excuse my clumsiness, please forgive. Now we also have Maureen on the show. We'll come right back to you, David. I'm sorry. So, hi, Maureen.
Hi.
Do you have anything that you want to add with what David just said?
Sure, I can talk a little bit about meditation for me, what it's meant. I think the first time I experienced meditation, I've been a health columnist and writer for quite a while, and I interviewed Herbert Benson, and he talked about the relaxation response and using it to lower your blood pressure. And I think people do think of meditation as a stress relief. And in those early days, I thought, yeah, there's a good way to de-stress when your life is crazy and you're running around doing 10 zillion different things. You stop and do that. But it's come to mean a lot more than that to me over the years. I've found different types of meditation. David was just starting to talk about that. But I've done guided meditations, and I like chanting, and I'll do different things and just experiment with what just kind of resonates with me or calls to my heart. But the quiet meditation, maybe I was even scared of it in the beginning. I think I've seen a lot of people that are scared of just being silent, and that what's going to happen if you just get quiet for a moment and be still and be in nature or be anywhere. I think a lot of people are afraid of quieting their mind, and I realized when I first started doing it, it was a little difficult, and I couldn't do it for that many minutes, and I didn't put a qualifier on it that I have to do it 20 minutes. I just did it what I could do, and I've grown to the point where I can do it longer now, and I feel like it's a place where I want to be more, and I see that place where I used to be, where I ran around like a crazy person and had all kinds of things in my planner about I was going to do this with this person, I was going to do that, I had to get this work done. And I don't want to be there anymore. I want to be in this quiet, beautiful place more often than not. And I think that today is a perfect time to think about that, because I think at the holidays, everybody kind of opens their heart and is in this beautiful spot. You may not even know why, but it's this giving and receiving of love. But I just feel like this is a perfect day to talk about. We need to go there more often and get quiet and not be so afraid of it. I think our culture is the culture of, let me achieve this. I've got 7 steps to do that, or I've got a bucket list, and we just have all these goals and things that we just really think we need to do. And I think now more, maybe we just need to step back and be quiet and just be. That's where we need to be, is just be and appreciate and have some gratitude for what is in our life. And I don't know, I feel like meditation has brought me to that space. And if I don't do it every day, I find I can go back and I do slip out of it. It's not like I'm in it 24/7, but I feel, I want to be in it more, but I think that it's a beautiful place to be. That's all I can say. Whether you chant or do guided or do just quieting the mind and trying to think. I heard somebody say once that just all those thoughts are running by and you're not your thoughts. They're just running by. And if you just say to yourself, hello, 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 who's down there? That's where you're at. It's not your thoughts. We connect so much to those. And I feel blessed to not be at that place where I was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, where I'm just running around on a hamster wheel.
Yeah, it's an entirely different existence when you're not run by your thoughts. I will say it a third time, it is an entirely different existence when you're not run by your thoughts. You know, would you agree, David?
Yes, absolutely.
It's an entirely different existence when you're not run by your thoughts.
Yeah, and it's funny whenever I hear people, well, when I hear you talk about it, when I was just listening to Marie describe it, and it's kind of along the lines of when you hear or read articles about mindfulness, it sounds so simple. It sounds like, it really, at an intellectual level, makes complete sense, really, that we have thoughts, but we are not those thoughts. That intellectually, maybe it's my awareness now that makes sense, but it seems like that's an intellectual thing you can grasp, that we are beings that have thoughts, but we are beings beyond our thoughts. Those thoughts are not us. Yet, as simple as that sounds, it's the practice that gets you to be able to be it and feel it and exist that way. So, because I went years with an intellectual interest in stuff like this, in contemplation. And I think one of the first conversations I had with you many years ago, Allison, was I mentioned I came upon this podcast called The Buddhist Geeks, and I was listening to it, and that was an intellectual interest. And it wasn't until I learned to sit and learned the mechanics and actually developed the practice that thing that feels and seems intellectually simple, that we are not our thoughts, actually starts to exist for us.
That's the craziest thing about the conversion that happens when we stop living from our thoughts, because the intellectual mind will make things seem one way in life, therefore seem one way. And then when we start living from the being, life turns inside and out. It just totally reverses order. And so it's fun, the idea of everything is as it appears to be. Sure. And nothing is as it appears to be. So I love what we're talking about right now, because it's very helpful for people wondering, hearing both of your processes with the approach to it, and why would you do it, and how it's an intellectual understanding, and how we live from the mind, and how people run from the mind. I know I wrote about this in my first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong? From living in the East for 10 years and seeing the contrast of an entire hemisphere that has a practice of mindfulness and meditation as their main philosophical background for centuries. So maybe not everybody meditates, for sure, but there's still monks running around everywhere, at the market in the morning when you get your veggies, on the subway, in the city. I mean, they're just everywhere in their monk robes with a constant reminder of, oh, I discipline the mind, discipline self. There's something bigger than small personality, ego, mind, self. And so when we are in the West so geared to be productive based on our thoughts, our intellectual gearing that comes from our ego identity, the whole externally thrusted cultivation of us in our lives doesn't afford for this internal cultivation. The momentum of non-self-care of a typically busy employed parent or employed person or business owner, they're gearing towards the external world and taking care of everything, is so full throttle in the United States of America, in the West, but in particular our country, that to suggest to someone in that mode to sit down and listen to your thoughts, they can't even hear it. So it's a gradual approach to even consider, why the heck would I do that? And I don't have time for that. And it's a slow winding down. And a lot of the times people need crisis in order to cause them to do it. So I love what you two are talking about. I also want to add in too, I find that like there's aspects to the Western religions that make us run from looking inside, as if there's a boogeyman or a monster hiding at the back of the mind. And it's just the subconscious that needs clearing. It's a natural part of this process. And wherever you go, there you are. So this process helps you get more grounded in your body. It helps you be able to concentrate. I just had a client yesterday have the biggest breakthrough. I've been working with him weekly for 2 years, and he is finally seeing that adult labeled in his 50s, ADD, ADHD, isn't relevant. Because of his practices of starting to stop being so productive, wind down a little bit, be in his body, listen to his higher self, have a connection to who he really is instead of his thinking, productive, intellectual mind, as a scientist he is, he just now is able to concentrate and see that that ADD, ADHD label isn't relevant and that it came from this running. So that having been said, as we are in humanity spiritual awakening, you guys are both talking about, okay, so this is a part of me beyond the mind You want to talk a little bit more about that? Either one of you. David, is now a good time to bring in your mechanics question? Will it act as a good transition?
We keep looking for this smooth transition for this this one question. You know, you told me to make some notes before we had our call, Allison. So I was.
I know I did. So go ahead and ask the mechanics question.
Well, I also have a question about your book. I have a specific question that has to do with choices that we make that are in alignment, but I feel like maybe this mechanics question about meditation will, and I'm actually, and I have to admit, I'm curious where Maureen comes down, where Maureen is with your meditation practice as well. So I'll go here. My question is with visualization, this is something that's been so happening, I pretty much have three things that happen. For the most part, I can notice the thought and come back to my breath. And that's how it goes, for the most part. And I'm just, I don't know, half the time, more than half the time, less than half the time, I don't know. But for the most part, I can do that. But then I have kind of identified these visualizations where one of them is where I notice that I'm in replay mode. So one of the modes I've noticed in my mind is replay mode, where you go and you're thinking about stuff from you're replaying the events or even the thoughts and stuff from yesterday. And when I notice that I'm in replay mode and there's a bunch of them at once, I have this visualization where I kind of take all of them and wrap them up in something, a blanket, a sheet or something like that, and I can take them all at once and place them in the stream or in the ocean or something like that. It evolves and it changes. So that's one example. Another example, and my question is generally with visualizations, because another example is when I notice that I have, you know, sure, you both can relate. I'm sitting there and I recognize I have no idea how long this has been happening, but for the past however many minutes, I have been completely engrossed in this train of thought. I have just been completely and utterly focused on this thing that I'm thinking about. And I grab it, yep. And I notice it. And then my visualization is that, and this kind of comes from the dog off the leash analogy that I've heard you use, Allison, where I have this visualization where I have a dog, a lovely medium-sized animal sitting next to me, who I just kind of gently and lovingly pet and stroke and say, okay,
nice.
come back and sit and now and just watch and all is well. So these are
nice.
But then I jump into so my question is, these are visualizations. I know that I'm not so with where I want to be with meditation. Where do these types of visualizations fall in? Are these things that you think maybe I'd hold on to? Maybe I eventually let go? Is it just part of the process? Where do visualizations come into play when, for the most part, I can sit there and come back to my breath as I notice my thought, but then sometimes I have these little kind of visual strategies that creep in.
It's everything you just said. You'll eventually let go of it. It's what you need now. It's part of the process. So for Maureen, you said something about it's just so hard for people to sit still and be silent because of the gearing towards this productive life as an American that I then elaborated a little bit on. And so
I think for me, David, it's the same way. I notice a thought and I come back to the breath and I feel like it's different every time I meditate. And I'm sure I have a long way to go because I read that Eckhart Tolle has said he can have no thoughts at all. I'm nowhere near that. I just keep coming back. And some days it's harder for me than others. And I think that's because I've let myself react and get out there and get spun around to things. But I feel like I'm not in a place where I have to judge it anymore. I just think, okay. So, oh, well, I am thinking again. And, well, Allison,
yeah.
You say that. Thinking.
You got that from me, yeah.
Off of the thoughts, yeah. Yeah. And that's all I try to do because I do not want to make this any kind of, like we do in this culture, that I have to achieve something, that I have to be at this perfect spot where I have no thoughts. All I'm trying to do is be in a still place and quiet the mind. And some days it's better than others. And hopefully that's I don't even want to have a goal. I just want to keep being in that spot. And I think it's going to change that eventually I'm going to be more aware of being that true self, but I don't want to put any kind of time limit on it or whatever, because I think that's where you get hung up even more. And I don't use any kind of visualizations. I think you do what helps you. And I kind of feel like this on my whole spiritual path, that I can read something by somebody, and if it resonates and maybe I can integrate it with what I'm doing, I do it. If I think, it doesn't make sense to me, or I don't know, because my reality is limited and my consciousness is expanding, but there's so much more out there that I don't know, I just keep working with that and not putting no, like, barriers to whatever. Just try to be open. And you know, the funny thing is, I think I can do it better when I'm in this spiritual place than when I'm trying to, well, obviously when I'm thinking about, you know, what I need to do for work or other things, it doesn't work as well. For some reason, I'm able, when I get in that mindful place, to just open up and think, wow, that sounds interesting. And it's possible, but I'm not there in the rest of life. And I want to transition to being there more. But I feel for me that, and I think a lot of people probably need to hear this, that don't put anything on yourself. Just sit. And if some days it's a couple of minutes and your kids need you or something happens and you get pulled away, fine. But just keep trying to do it, because it's that intention and that trying to build that practice. Because we do it with other stuff. Like we brush our teeth. We have our cup of coffee. We do whatever. We
practice,
get
the
routine.
Saxophone. We develop skills.
Yeah.
We practice the saxophone.
Yeah. But we don't, for some reason, we think that this is just too hard and we can't do it. And we just, I think it's our culture.
With the ego. It's because perfect. It's because we're dealing with the ego identity, and to start to extrapolate, to undo who we have known ourselves to be our whole lives is frightening to many people. There's a sense that people have that if I approach this practice, I'm no longer going to be who I've been able to get away with being and who I'm familiar with. So, David, your question is perfect. Mari, you've experienced in my actual yoga and meditation class in the studio. You've experienced the class. David, you've experienced meditation instruction through the audio. I purposefully stay with Buddha's most frequently taught technique because it is the simplest one. And whenever you become aware that you're thinking, no matter the content of the thought, planning, reviewing, excitement, anticipation, complaining, thinking, pull off of the thought, no matter the content, come back to the breath. Let the thought get carried away as if a leaf on a river's current. Step out of the river of the thinking mind to the river bank, to solid ground. Inhale with your nostrils so you're in your body, solid ground. So it's the redirect is the bottom line. It's the musculature. It's like when you're at the gym and you're working out your weight, you're not going in between sets to the locker room to try on the outfit that you want to fit into or that you want to look good in. Some people do. I mean, it's funny to be at the gym and look at how much people look at themselves in the mirror. Are my biceps more cut? Are my triceps more toned? You know, you're looking for the immediate results. But it's the same thing when you're sitting and meditating. It's not quiet. It's the workout. The payoff is off the mat. But it's developing the neurological musculature that the mind doesn't have as much increasingly tendency to veer off into letting the mind lead the show. Like you're the dog owner and your dog is your mind and the dog is on a leash, but you are barely able to keep up with the dog because it wants to go here and it wants to go there. And you're just following along. Instead, it's reining slowly it in so that you don't have the tendency when you're off the mat to just be able to go and follow any thought, and you're not at the mercy of your thinking mind, and you're not a victim to your assessments when you go out in the world and you judge and you evaluate. you could judge that person as, because David, I saw you talking about judgment too on another post. You can go out and as you're out and about and you judge and evaluate that person. And so then you don't want to talk to them because you've labeled them a certain thing because they look this certain way. And you limit your world. The mind is meant to limit. So when you approach meditation in that simplistic way that I just described of exactly the process that I have used for 24 years, I've used it 25 years, I've been teaching it 24 years, I see people have a heck of a time because the mind is used to assignments. It's used to being busy. It's used to problem solving, figuring stuff out. It's like chewing on a piece of tough meat. It's used to having something to chew on. So to take it from that busy, productive state to the quiet space of just being with no thought is a huge range. And so there's intermediary steps that you're doing right now, David. And some people will, when I work with clients one-on-one and I set them up on their own individualized meditation instruction, if they are a really busy analyst, for example, a marketing analyst or a software designer or an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor, I will give them a little – it depends. I mean, I tend to favor this technique, but if they have a really busy mind, then a mantra gets assigned. We talked about this at the very beginning, David. So what you're doing
That's how I started out, actually.
Yeah. So what you're doing is a gradual easing off of the mind running the show. And so you've engaged, I love the dog, the gentleness of the dog. You're engaging in strategies, and it makes sense. And eventually, I have to say, it does become what Eckhart Tolle described. Maureen, thank you for bringing that in, because I can stand here today and I can say, it's something that I don't normally typically say. You do get to a point, and I am there. And I have found the last couple of years in meditation wondering, oh, my God, am I just spacing? Do I need to bring my being back into my body? Am I spacing out? No, I'm creating space in my body from my being, not being constrained or constricted or contracted because of my thinking mind. And that's what happens after like minute 15-ish, maybe minute 20 in a 30-minute practice, is as you redirect and you redirect off the thoughts, eventually, gradually, there's more space created. And that's what's happening. That's why, like, sounds sound more loud when you're in a quiet space, because all of your sensory perception is accentuated more because you're expanding your consciousness. And so I am there now. I sit in meditation and I don't have thoughts. And it's kind of weird getting used to, I got to tell you. It really is, because you could hear that I was questioning, is there something wrong here? Says the author of her first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong? I was questioning when I got to that point, is there something wrong? Should I be more, but that spaciousness is what we're going for. So imagine going through life instead of that contraction that the mind sends you into with its evaluations, its worries, its doubts, its judgments, planning, it's reviewing, it's complaining. To go about life that with that spaciousness is exactly how I live my life now. So there's a range of progression for sure. And I got to tell you, even as a person who's been weight training for decades and a personal trainer, the range of progression is the biggest one I've ever seen with any practice, any new thing you're trying to do in your life and develop talent and skill with. This is the widest berth of range. Because there's so much you can gain along each step, and it's so far from where you first are when you first start the practice to where you can take yourself, and it never stops opening. It's beautiful. So, yes, David, you'll drop them eventually, but they're good now.
It's
I still even go back sometimes. That's why I think I like chanting, that I'll do that. And I'll do a mantra, and well, chanting is that. It's just a musical way of doing it, because yeah. I think like with anything in life that you may have a couple of steps up and a couple of steps back, and it's just a process and kind of a journey, and not to worry so much about where you are on it or compare yourself to anyone else, and just like hear someone that says there's. Like you, Allison, that says there's this beautiful place where you can be where there's no thoughts and they're not making you crazy. It's just to know that, but to then to let go and just be comfortable with where you're at the moment and just keep the practice. I went to one spiritual conference and I heard a speaker talk about, someone asked him about coming all the time and getting enlightened and whatever. And he said something that I thought was stuck with me for so long, is that you can read all your books, and I've read them too, David, and do all and go to conferences, but you have to ask yourself, why am I not doing this? Because the obviously the intellectual part of you has read these fascinating books, because they are fascinating and about what you can do. What is stopping you from doing it? What is stopping you? And I think that's, and it may just be fear of the unknown, and you do change. You do change, and things are, things that you used to think were important are not important, and you just, yeah, your life changes.
And I want to speak to that.
But don't be scared. It's better. It's better.
It is better. It is better. But I want to speak to that change. And David, maybe you can come in and speak to that change too, because it's essential. It's that inversion. I spoke to it at the beginning of the show, coming from living from the personality that we are told we are by our spouses, by our parents, by our friends, by our kids, by our colleagues. Oh, she's like that. And people who aren't, I've always, my whole life, kept a distance from people because of their, even before I started meditating, because of their projections, until they gave me space to define myself. I stay away from people who label me. I always have, and I used to rebel against the labels, because I don't want other people's minds and their stuff they need to clear out put into my world and on my field. So there's this ego identity that gets cultivated growing up and being a certain way one day. The laziness of the mind and a typical behavior of the mind is a label. Oh, she's like that, because the mind is trying to help us construe the physical world, living on planet Earth in a body. And so it's just doing its job. But when we live in a culture where the backdrop isn't, please work with your mind, and instead it's please live on the surface, live from that intellect, produce from that intellect, produce from that ego, produce from that identity, that personality is what serves you, show it, shine it, grow it, then we don't have a sense of other options, and then people live from that constraint that the judgments and the labels give, and then people feel the constraint, and they constrain their lives into what else is not possible. And they live from the, what's not possible. And that ego identity is what eventually, gradually gets extrapolated as you go into this practice. So there's a part of the ego that cowers in the face of setting up this practice. And it's part of that boogeyman in the back of the mind that people get, which is why they go to seminars and they read books, but they don't do the practice. It's like a visit. You can visit in with the energy of what that potential is, but the fear of becoming different and becoming different than what they've always known themselves to be is what keeps people going to the seminars and not doing the practice. I remember one time my very first teacher about the chakras, Carolyn Mace, decades ago, I went to a conference by her, and she, God bless her style, stood at the on the stage. Eventually, she said, how many more workshops are you going to need to go to before you let this go? How many more workshops do you really need to attend? And she was making money off of us attending her workshops. And she gradually screamed. She's like, and I mean, let it go. When are you going to just let it go? And I mean, let it go. And she, like, three more times until she was screaming from the stage at us. And I'll never forget that. And I see that with my students. I see that with my clients. Not so much because my clients have taken action and my students have taken action, but I see in the beginning stages when people are first doing this, the shopping, the consumerism of practices and of spirituality instead of the just doing it. So it's like, you know, before you actually book the hotel, you know, you do all the Googling, you do all the searches, and you do all the potentials. The same with flights. It's that same kind of shopping that keeps the ego in its comfort zone, and it keeps the ego beyond somebody who isn't shopping for seminars and spiritual seminars. It keeps the ego a little bit touched in with the potential of what else is possible. But there's a certain typical fear, and the Native Americans have an animal ascribed to this actual process because they understood that in the path of being a human being, the ego gets frightened and it will play games to keep us from doing this kind of opening. And they call it they give the coyote as the animal totem to this process, that when the soul in the human body is directing towards expansion, the ego will snap back and say no and try and keep it constrained into the familiar. And so the ego then keeps us in a chasing our tail kind of way, or a hamster on a wheel kind of way. And so they describe the coyote as a dog chasing its tail to this process. So at some point, it seems like the majority of people need a crisis in order to force them to start listening inside and extrapolating this identity. And if they don't, they end up in crisis. And one of my colleagues says, the times we're living in right now, it's change or die. And I don't mean to be extreme, but there's a sense of that. We are being asked to come out from underneath the coat of our ego, identity, personality, and take off the coat and find out who we really are. And we're being juiced down on planet Earth with all of these vibrations since 2012 that's bringing the unconsciousness, the buried stuff up to the surface, both from within the Earth and within us. So people are having all these weird-ass symptoms in their bodies, and they're going to their doctors, and they're saying, what is this? I don't know what this is. It's an allergic reaction. What is this? It's people cleansing. It's the Earth cleansing, because we're becoming more awakened and therefore more sensitive. So people, we're getting steered towards our spiritual awakening and our being and our body and being open to this kind of presence and living from that instead of the ego. And people who are fighting it are ending up in more turmoil. So this show is perfect because you guys are talking about each of your own approaches. So do you have any other questions, David? You said you had one about spirituality. Oh, the book, Choice. I think that's good. Well, choice is important.
Well, yeah.
It change.
It's tied together, but I kind of want to go with what you're saying there because it's comfortable. It's our mind is comfortable where it is. I've actually experienced a lot of what you were saying. I can experience it viscerally where my mind is grabbing hold of something familiar. I've even experienced holding on to something that's uncomfortable just because that thing that is uncomfortable is familiar. And what's unfamiliar is what our ego mind, as you've called it, is resisting against. So that's there's a lot of things to kind of be scared of, like Allison sitting there not having a thought. That's scary. That can be scary. There are a lot of things that can make us just stay with what's so much easier to stay with what's comfortable and what we're used to. And I just want to say to anyone who's listening, just take a step. You don't have to do everything now. You don't have to go to all of these conferences. You don't have to do anything that we're talking about now. Just one step. And I've noticed that I've noticed this, and I can point to this time and time again, when I take just one little step forward toward this path, the universe, God, my spirituality, whatever you want to call it, responds to me tenfold. So there's kind of that reassurance. And I love what Maureen was talking about earlier when I first asked my question about visualizations. Your response, Maureen, was so easy, and you spoke about judgment and what that – and it's so easy for us to judge. And the coolest thing that I've noticed is when we start to let go of judgment, and it's a beautiful place to be in where you can stop judging, assessing your thoughts as you're having them in meditation, because what's really cool about that is it kind of mixes and matches and translates into walking down the street and being without judgment. It's like you practice not judging, and that translates into a beautiful place, and it feels so good to not be in that place where you're assessing everything and judging everything. And the last thing I just want to say is you guys made me think about that when you're talking about the intellect, where we're shopping for stuff, and how many more workshops do you have to go through in that, where we're feeding our intellect. I had this experience the other day when I was driving. I was listening to a podcast, and I had heard about this is just my experience. I'm sure the Wisdom Podcast is a wonderful podcast. I only listened to like 10 minutes of one episode. But what I found in this particular podcast was it was one PhD, one person with a PhD interviewing another person with a PhD, and it just felt so intellectual to me. And probably if I'd given it more time, it would have been fine. It just maybe wasn't the place I was in at the time. But the reason I bring it up is because I then transitioned into a podcast with an episode where they were interviewing Alice Parker, who is a 91-year-old. I'm going to butcher this, but she's a spiritual composer and singer, and she teaches singing. And she started saying, and she was talking about singing and the communicative nature of singing. She's been doing this her whole life, and I had such a different response to that podcast than the one that was engaging my intellect, because this one, I was listening to people, you know, they had, it was wonderfully produced, really, but they had little snippets of just choir music. And it was in there, and she was talking about it, and this is a woman who's 91 years old, and I felt it at such a different level, and I feel like that's one of the huge benefits of all of this, is that we get to live from a place that's not so much our intellect, but a place where we're feeling things and being things. And I know that there was a period in my life, in my adult life, where I was feeling almost nothing. And I didn't know that then, but I know that now because of this work.
That's just beautiful. I am pausing just because of the...
Wow. Yeah, I was thinking too, wow.
Of what you just said, because the majority of people, it's so challenging with the marketing of what I do, because I'm speaking to people who don't know that they're deadened. Until you awaken and you live more from this spaciousness of non-judgment, of openness, of channeling life force energy down through your crown chakra, having your life force awakened in your body where you're tingling and you're joyous and you're connected to the greater field of qi all around us. I teach qigong too, in case the listener is wondering what she's talking about. And in concert with the universe and in concert with the pulse of life, you just don't know when you're living from your identity or your ego mind, that living in that celebration of life is even possible. So to communicate that to someone, you just did a good job, David, because you showed the contrast. And I really am grateful for you putting it that way.
Yeah.
Because it means you're alive. You're really alive. And that was my first and still is my tagline, awake, alive, and ready to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
You're not using coping mechanisms because you feel deadened. You continue to chase after the same energy that's the habit energy. So if you're in the routine of being deadened and just getting by and attending to everything you have to do on the surface of life, like attracts like. You'll keep doing the same types of life force deadening behaviors, like searching online and checking out with consumerism or checking out online and just not awakened. And so that seems to be the purpose for crisis for a lot of people now, whether it's divorce or job loss or disease. Eckhart Tolle said, crisis is the greatest spiritual teacher for the masses. And I have been asking... Mom sat me down. We were talking. She was sitting down. We were just out in the back swing in Beaver Dam. Do you remember that, David, at all?
Absolutely.
That wooden swing that it has, like, seats for four. That's a huge, like, it moves all at once. And so we stepped up on the wooden platform and then sat. We had a lot of good talks out back there. And
yeah.
She said to me, I was, like, 12, Allison, you should become a psychologist. She was hearing me talk about my friends or whatever I was talking about. But Mom said you should become a psychologist. And so I did. And as you guys know, after the first three semesters in my bachelor's program, I was horrified by how I was not being shown what makes humans choose what they do, what makes humans happy. I was being shown the hardware of the brain and its functioning and how to use that in an industrial psychology application to help further capitalistic motives. So I left the major. What? But I've been asking my whole life about how do we be happy? What makes us be happy and feel light, feel that light? And I've always looked at the what else is possible. I've lived from that blissed out state. And anything that hasn't allowed for that, I've been like, no. And that sometimes it's been a strong no. We're not meant to suffer. We're not meant to be here half alive. So I don't believe that crisis needs to happen for people to awaken spiritually. I believe it can be done by listening. You listen to your guidance. You're here listening to this show today. By listening to your guidance, following your inspiration, listening to shows like this, and then just taking one simple step, like you're hearing them say, instead of needing a crisis to force you to awaken. There's so much to be had nowadays. David, you said that, like when you're living connected, how much, like when you take one simple step, how much the universe comes in with its screaming yes, whether that's all of a sudden like birds landing in the tree above your head chorusing, or you have, because you've taken the step, three people saying yes and responding to you, or like that element of self-mastery. There is nothing, whether it's orgasm, it's chocolate, it's buying the best thing ever, it's traveling to the top of the Himalayas, there is nothing as exhilarating as self-mastery. And you're talking about small steps towards every step. I don't mean you hit a point where you're sitting there in meditation with no thoughts and you're awakened only. I mean any little choice where you're used to doing it this way and you know that deadens your life force. You know that deadens you down to life. It contracts you. It makes you smaller. It makes your response to life smaller. It makes your life and its possibilities smaller in choosing the other possibility. That is a moment of self-mastery.
I think, too, people can think of it from the point that if you're just aware that maybe you do, because I find this with myself, you do something the old way, the old habit energy, but right away you think, wow, why did I do that? Why did I say that? And you realize you're at least, that's a start, like that's a step two, that you're aware I just fell into the old
yes.
trap or my monkey mind going and doing the same thing over and over. And that is just a start, and you should just celebrate that that's a start, and maybe next time you won't.
That's mindfulness. That's mindfulness.
Yeah.
That's the payoff. That's when you can fit into that great outfit from the gym, from the workout in the gym, and now you look hot in your outfit. It's the same payoff. That's mindfulness, becoming more able to observe what you're choosing. That is a payoff from the practice, and gradually over time, that observer gets stronger so you can see what you're doing and choosing every day throughout your day. It's the whole point of doing this, so that you can become more aware of your choices, so that you can make choices that lead to more joy and less suffering. It's not small. It's huge what you're
Amen.
Saying.
Amen. Amen.
And I have to say, from personal experience, even if you are just curious, even if just, you know, if you're listening to this a conversation, or you're reading something, or listening to another podcast, or you heard someone talk about it, even if you are simply curious, that's it. That's a step. I was curious for a really long time before I took another step. But I agree that it doesn't have to be crisis. It can just that curiosity can start, and that was I started. I did an ebook on Jennifer Yogi, which is just simple insights for ease in your awakening, because I completely believe that you're designed to have ease, and it can be that way. And all I did is just write down these little things in the first bit of time, I don't know, 6 months, a year or so, that felt like things that if I knew them, then it could be easier. It doesn't have to be scary. Of course, there are moments of fear. We all have them. There are moments of fright, such. But all in all, it can be easy.
But all in all, what?
I'm sorry. I said, all in all, it can be easy. It doesn't mean that it's not work. I mean, when you say that specifically, we're talking about meditation. When you say it's like a workout at the gym, yeah, it's one of the harder workouts at the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the day you hate.
But for the longest time, it's simply just getting yourself, and I think Maureen alluded to this earlier, said it specifically, just sitting down, just stopping, just taking the time. It's a huge win to celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said, and Maureen might get that from me. I mean, just by being there in the practice, sitting, you have the win. I mean, it doesn't matter how crappy the meditation might be labeled after. It doesn't matter how loud your mind was and how you could not silence it. Just carving out that time, saying, I am important, this is important, sends all sorts of signals to the universe, to your higher self, to your entire existence, that flips it on its lid, like I said at the beginning of the show, where it inverts your whole life. Our power is inside of us. And I did an interview yesterday on a radio show in San Francisco, and it was for busy moms and not getting enough sleep. And the father, the man interviewing me, was a dad of two kids, and he was talking about how busy he was. And I was saying, he was looking for it. He said, Allison, people can't just go live in Asia like you did. That's not what I'm suggesting. But what I am suggesting is not to, he was frustrated because he wanted actual answers. And I was introducing the concepts of energy supplies. And he just wanted, how can I get more time? How can I, you know, sleep better? He was so pressured. And I said to him, stop listening to your mind and its assumptions of, I need to do this to provide for my kids. I thought of you, David, actually, while I was on this interview. Stop thinking that just because the other kids and parents are doing this activity, you need to plug your kids into it. Stop thinking you need to be keeping up. Look at your assumptions. Look at what you're choosing because of these assumptions. That right. was ultimately what I answered in the 5-minute interview I had with him. And it's this is how you get to that point where you're more able to observe detached from your choices, where you're not attached and having to continue choosing. This is where this practice, what we're talking about, is where you create the space to be able to observe yourself making these choices and observe, well, why am I making that choice? And be able to create the distance to then make a different choice, to then change your life. Our power is in our choices, and we get to the ability to be able to see us making these choices by creating this distance from our mind. And I have to add this in because we're talking about meditation in this entire process. It's a simple question. If we can establish such a practice as sitting down and observing our thoughts, does that not therefore imply we are more than our thinking mind? That there is another part of us that is above, beyond our thinking mind and our thoughts. So does that not imply that the thoughts don't have to therefore run the show? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. What is it you said, or I read it, I forget, I read so many people and I just, it all jumbles up in there, but that our thinking mind and our thoughts are just 5% of our consciousness and the other, or 5 or 10% and the other,
yeah, that was me.
80, 90 is,
yep, yeah. 85%, thank you for bringing that up, it's so great, Maureen, it's a generous estimate. I think it's more than this from what I observe in my own world and working with others for so long. 85% of our choices that we make day to day, moment to moment, are from our subconscious. So if you envision driving and you're first learning in your conscious mind, so the straights in the brain that are getting formed happen at the more frontal lobe, the conscious mind, when we're learning how to drive. Once we master it and we can sit in our car and flip the key on and then we're doing it without thinking, that's become a subconscious habit. 85, and that's, again, generous. Some people say it's 90, 95. I'm up there. Of our choices we make on a day-to-day basis come from that robotic space of the subconscious. And so it behooves us to look at the choices so we can change our lives. Choice by choice. So what is it, David Maureen, I'm going to ask you a question. I'll offer mine first. What is it that you've become aware of recently, and it can be small, medium, or large, in your life that you've been choosing, that you're desiring to choose differently? For me, it's – Okay, so one of the things I've been actioning out lately that's actually kept me busier is changing my business model so I can create more space in self-care and self-nurturance for me. It's me saying, no, business owning is not meant to be like this. And I've had people around me saying, get your work out to more people. And so I went and worked with a business coach for the last 2 months on the weekends and have been totally revamping my business model so I can be making different choices on a day-to-day moment where there's more space created for Allison while getting the work out to more people. So that's a choice I've been changing instead of the just going with what's been working.
Gosh, not to be repetitive, but I feel like I'm in the same spot with my business. It works, and for a long time I liked it, but I just feel like there's something more, and I think that what I'm choosing is that same path. In fact, I had an opportunity just for an interview that might be continuing that same path in a different place, and I thought about it and was flattered, but then I thought, I could do some different things. I could do more. And I have to say it is scary. And that's that I am getting hung up there, that I would like to choose differently and to just be open to all the possibilities. And I feel myself there sometimes. And then I feel myself think, no, I need to be the practical and do this and this and this. And so I'm dancing between that. Yeah. Yeah, you've said that to me. And that's so, but I do feel like where I don't want to go, where it's out of my comfort zone, will be more exciting, will be the place that I should be. And well, I shouldn't even say should. I just think it would be more exciting. It's just being a little scared that it's definitely not normal, and you know, it's not what other people are choosing, and I'm not going to be the little robot that, you know, does the career this way or that way. So yeah, so that's where I'm choosing sometimes to let my mind tell me that I should go with the regular path, and I want to step back and open up. So anyway, that's where I'm choosing. They're together.
The same physiological reaction. The body does the same thing with excitement and with fear. And I think we overinterpret it when we're actually excited as fear. So good self-awareness, Maureen.
Well, I think it's the thinking. I know you've helped me with that. The thinking is always there, but it's the surface. So yeah, and I just feel like I'll get there someday, but I want to be open. I think I am more, like I have said, in the spiritual realm, I'm open to like, yeah, tell me about that. That sounds interesting. But in the work realm, it's like, oh, I don't know.
But that's exactly the revolution we're going on through right now, is making the spiritual mundane. Instead of going to church or going to temple or doing prayers or talking to archangels and meditating, and that's the only time we connect in with our spirituality, it's making our mundane everyday life spiritualized. And all that means necessarily is awakened, where you're not deadening your life force just to get by, where you're allowing yourself to be open. And open just means awakened to the possibilities. That's all. And it's an application of our daily lives, how we earn our money. It's the absolute revolution we're going through right now. Why do you think the election was just what it was? There's a massive amount of change in unconsciousness and ego identity driving forces that are being asked to take a step back and open up to what else is possible. I'm not suggesting that the results of the election were this, but we're opening up to what else is possible. Out of the status quo. That's the nature of what we're doing right now. David, what about
that
you?
No,
go ahead, Maureen. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that made me think of something. I don't know why I was thinking about it last night, but that when people think about being awakened or enlightened, I think, I don't know if this is the culture maybe, but I think a lot, and maybe I've thought this way, that it's like this huge moment, this majestical moment, like, or on a pinball machine, all the lights are going off and you're like, things are coming down and you get this guidance and you just, oh, this is amazing. I am beginning to think now, or maybe it's just for me, that it's subtle, that all these little moments like David was talking about, that you're just curious. And then the next step is you take a step, and then, and you just open a little bit, and it just that we shouldn't expect this glorious, the angel stepped down or whatever your religion is and just make it this majestical moment. It's not. It's just working towards this. And it, I think it's in, well, I guess in some ways too, it's inside. So we forget like that consciousness is like 5%. And then there's, if that's under 95%, it's all inside. And it's like someone described it as the big sky. There's just so much there. And so we're not going to get it right away. It's just, but it made me think of that because I don't know the
perfect mind.
That maybe don't think about that magical moment. Just be on your path. Don't worry
David,
about what's going to happen on it.
David, I think you were referring to that though. Like everything lines up when you make a choice. One choice in the, you know, where you've been afraid and you make the choice and the universe just seems to endorse that choice tenfold. Isn't that what you're?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I've experienced. But I don't pretend that it's easy to make that first choice or even the second choice. But if you repeat it often enough, you develop a sense of trust. It's funny. I was thinking, Maureen, when you mentioned about the choices you were making at work, I had a similar experience where I made a similar choice about work where it felt like to make that choice would be doing the same thing. So I made a different choice, and I was just in trying some new things lately, I found myself I had on my phone I had a wallpaper of it was just something that, you know, it was my kids or something around my house or something for the longest time, and I changed it. I looked for I found this wonderful thing that said it was an image of trust, and it fit perfectly on my phone, none of the apps or icons were in the way or anything, and it just had trust, and it gave me something to remember as I'm making choices. And then I was looking for one that had something to do with the comfort zone, because I am familiar with my comfort zone, and I'm getting more familiar with what's out of my comfort zone, and it's slowly becoming more comfortable to not be in my comfort zone, right? But there
Woo-hoo!
Was no picture that said comfort
conversion
zone that was
happening.
Fit on my phone. It was all too long and nothing worked. I couldn't scale it right. So my phone still says trust. But that comfort zone thing is, I guess I would just say that it starts small. Just little choices are huge wins. And as far as the spirituality aspect of it, I think I agree that I can't say that I definitely had experiences that are more significant than others, as far as those you know bells ringing and you know skies opening up and sorts of things. I mean, I've had experiences that are more that mean more than others, but every little one means something for sure.
Yeah, comfort zone's overrated. As a big butterfly, just flutters right by the window. I'm going to end on that note. Thank you all for listening, and bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.alisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.